love typing.
Not mess with my Google Docs, Meeksy. Supergirl Radio is going live every night of the week. How do you like it? Is becoming a human burrito a plus or a minus? I don't know. It does seem snug.
I mean, they say you are what you eat.
Cheer up.
I love that.
So I do a podcast called Supergirl Radio, and one of our segments is Lena Luthor, boardroom or ballroom.
Because really? She looks like a boss in this coat.
Nasty Luther, like a different Luther? It's not just Lena being mean?
No.
Helen Slater here. So fun to know that you're hosting a podcast called Supergirl Radio.
Welcome to Supergirl Radio, your source for all things related to the character of Kara Zor-El. My name is Rebecca Johnson.
I'm Morgan Glennon.
And we are live and wired on the DC TV Podcast YouTube channel and the Supergirl Radio Facebook page to discuss and review the Tomorrowverse animated movie, Batman The Long Halloween. And is it so long? Because we watched the deluxe edition, which is about 3 hours.
We dove right in.
So
one at a time? No, not for us. We're perfect. Podcasters.
We're trying to get through this Tomorrowverse marathon. So we just gotta keep going. So initially there was a part one and a part two. We just decided, since they packaged it as one movie, as 1 3-hour movie, we're like, let's do it.
So we decided YOLO, you know?
So we watched the deluxe edition. If you watch parts one and two, you can still join in. It's basically the same thing, just two parts combined into one. And if you are joining us for the first time and you're like, why is the Supergirl podcast talking about Batman? Well, we were very confused about the Crisis on Infinite Earths animated movie in the Tomorrowverse, which does feature Supergirl and probably will kind of prominently, depending on how they tell that story. It's a big story for Supergirl. And we were very confused by part one. So we are going back and we are watching all of the Tomorrowverse movies in order, including the animated shorts, so that maybe we can better understand part two. We'll see if that happens when we get there, because we're pretty close to getting
when
there.
Does part two come out? I was just trying to Google it.
It is
I'm not good at Googling.
End of April, maybe?
Oh my gosh.
So we might have to watch it in May, because we're not fully
April 23rd.
23rd, okay. Yes. So we're pretty close.
Yeah, that's coming up.
But we aren't finished with the Tomorrowverse yet. So I feel like we should finish
that up yet.
Yes. So I think we should finish our marathon, then talk about the Crisis Part Two, so that we can possibly better understand what's happening in that version of Crisis on Infinite Earths. So we are going to be talking about Batman The Long Halloween, the deluxe edition. So if you have any questions or comments, feel free to drop them in the live chat. But before we get to that discussion, we need to get to
the news.
Oh, I was doing the little typewriter and I wasn't paying attention. I'm also rusty. According to Deadline, Cruella and iTanya filmmaker Craig Gillespie?
Or maybe right? Gillespie?
Gillespie?
Maybe?
Gillespie?
Well, we'll have to look that up.
Craig, what's your name? is in talks to direct Supergirl for Warner Brothers DC Studios. The plan is for DC to shoot the movie for Q4 after they've completed James Gunn's Superman, which is shooting in Georgia for a July 11th, 2025 theatrical release. DC bosses Gunn and Peter Safran are producing. DCEV Chantal Nong is executive producing. The CAA repped Gillespie, we'll
look that up. We'll get that right next.
We're gonna find out, and then Rebecca will put like a pronunciation guide, which I'll still get wrong next to it. Happens many times. She always tries to help me, and I always still fail. anyway, he has a specialty when delivering female-driven projects. I, Tonya scored an Oscar win for Allison Janney as Best Supporting Actress and also notched a total of 3 Oscar nominations, including for Margot Robbie in the Best Actress category. His Cruella, a solo spinoff starring Emma Stone based on the 101 Dalmatians villain, was a big pandemic Disney Plus and box office hit combined, grossing more than $233 million worldwide. The movie won an Oscar for costume design. Let's also not forget Gillespie.
We'll just call him Craig right now. But you know, Craig.
Let's not forget Craig's other. We're on a first name basis because, like, the more I keep trying to pronounce it, the worse it's getting. but anyway, he's done other female-driven TV series like Hulu's Pam and Tommy, on which he received a Primetime Emmy nom for Outstanding Limited and Anthology Series. So interesting.
Yeah. So I don't think Deadline was writing this like they were for sure he was directing this. But parts of the article were like, Warner Brothers has not responded to comment. And we think we've heard. And I was like, why are you writing this article if you are not 100% correct on this?
Word on the street is.
Because I am now getting my hopes up. Because when this news came out, I was like, I've never seen any of his work. So I'm going to try.
I haven't either.
So I watched 4 of his movies over the weekend.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. I heard the buzz. Always do the homework. I have done none of it. But I heard the buzz about I, Tonya, and I was like, honestly, it's off brand for me to have not seen this movie because I love figure skating.
Yeah,
I love
me
everything
too.
About it, the pageantry, the beautiful athleticism, but also the scandals.
Yes,
and so
trash.
The fact that I haven't seen this movie is kind of insane.
Okay, I, Tonya was the first one I watched. I was alive. I'll just say I don't want to date myself, but I was alive with this situation when it happened. And it was a big deal. And I think a lot of people in the United States were very involved in it. I was like glued to the TV about everything that was happening.
When this was happening, you could not escape it. It was just everywhere. Like, even if you weren't interested in it, even if you were like, I don't like the pageantry and beauty of ice skating. There was no way to avoid. Listen, the 90s were a different time. There was like one TV station and you could not avoid it if they wanted to make things something a big story. So yeah, it was like everywhere.
So I, Tonya is an excellent film. I will say, nice. I think the title kind of sucks. I think like you could have tried a little harder than like copying iRobot. I feel like you could have tried a little harder. But
is that a final twist in the movie that she is a robot?
Harding is revealed to be a robot. Now that would be a good movie.
We have gotten her wrong this whole time.
But despite my kind of feeling like the title is a little lazy, the film is excellent. It has a real like the character work in it is very good. There's a real style to it. The acting performances are incredible. If it sounds like Margot Robbie was nominated but didn't win, she should have won. Because she made me care about Tonya Harding in a way I have never cared about Tonya Harding. So it was really quite good. And I would not say that if I did not mean that, because I'm pretty critical of a lot of movies. And so I thought I, Tonya was excellent. The second one I watched was Cruella, because it's on Disney Plus and you can watch it. And I love Disney villains. Maleficent is like one of my favorite characters of all time. I don't want to talk about the Angelina Jolie movies. We're not going to discuss it. But Cruella.
You didn't like how she was misunderstood in that movie and she wasn't bad at all?
Or like a maternal figure for Aurora. It was fine. She was the hero. You know,
she was the hero all along. She was the hero we need.
You know, she's famous for turning into a dragon and being the mistress of all evil. But she did neither of those in the movies.
So I do feel like you're giving me a Maleficent movie and there's no dragon. I am a little disappointed.
No, Morgan, there is a dragon, but it's not Maleficent who turns into the dragon.
Did I forget this?
Which is worse? That's like the coolest thing about Maleficent.
How dare you take a red hair dragon?
Okay, so we are on. I have a whole rant about Maleficent. So we're going to go back to Cruella, who is the other Disney villain that they have made a movie about. And it was pretty good. I will say, I thought it leaned too much into the narration. I thought sometimes narration
that can be tricky with narration, though. It's one of those hit or miss things for me, honestly.
I think if he is familiar with narration, it might work for Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow.
Oh, that's true.
It is based in Ruthie's narration, maybe a thing that she writes that becomes very important at the end of Woman of Tomorrow. But I will say I have an issue with narration where it like tells you what you're looking at. Like there's a moment in Cruella where she's like, you know, you hear the voiceover say, "And I was running." And it's like over a shot of little Cruella like running. And I'm like, yes, I know you're running. I can see that you are running. You don't have to tell me that you're running.
We can fully see that.
Sometimes narration is a little unnecessary. But I thought, again, the film was well made. It had a real style to it. The character work was good. The acting performances were really good. So I have no, aside from the narration stuff, I thought Cruella was actually a really great movie. I also watched Dumb Money, which is his latest one, which is about the GameStop.
I wanted to see that. I didn't realize that he was the director of that.
So that one was like my least favorite if I had to rank them, just because I am kind of, and just that as a personal thing, I'm like not really into like the stock market.
Stock shorting.
I mean, it's kind of interesting, but yeah. But I think the character work wasn't as good in that, in my opinion. But there was a lot of stylistic choices in there that I liked, where they pulled up like, you know, TikTok videos and graphics and the way they kind of packaged all the information and sort of told that story through the real world stuff that was going on. Some of that I thought was really interesting. So I think that would be like a bottom tier for Craig Gillespie is what I'm going to call him. But then I also watched, he also has another movie on Disney Plus called The Finest Hours with he's one of the Chris's, Chris Pine, Steve Trevor.
Oh, that's
Chris Pine. Yes. I'm trying to like go through all the Chris's that I know. That is a movie about an oil tanker that gets kind of beat up in this big storm. And all of these guys on this oil tanker need rescuing. And so Chris Pine leads this group of United States Coast Guard folks to go out and rescue them. And it's quite a good movie. It's again, I think I, Tonya and Cruella, I think are like his top tier movies that I've seen out of the four. But I thought The Finest Hours was a good movie that had a lot of heart to it. And some of the visuals with the rain and the water was very, very interesting, the way he slowed down some of that stuff so that you could see the waves hitting them and stuff. So I actually, after watching those four movies, I was like, please let this guy direct Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow. I really hope this happens because he is a film director. I was worried that they were going to get like a TV director who has like done like one independent film. So I was a little worried that they weren't going to get like a genuine filmmaker. This guy is a genuine filmmaker and he knows what he's doing. He's very good at it. Like the article says, even though he is a man, potentially directing a movie about two females, he has a good track record with I, Tonya and Cruella.
Yeah.
He can tell a story about some ladies. Because Cruella, like the two big leads in that are two women. Cruella and Emma Thompson's character. What is her face? The Baroness, I think is what they call her. Yes. You would love Cruella.
I think that I would like that. I remember when trailers for this were coming out. I feel like I remember this specifically because they must have had some sort of deal with Freeform, the TV station, where they like were just like inserting random Cruella product placements into their shows. And I was like, Cruella, I don't know. I'm into it. And then the pandemic happened and I missed it.
Yes.
But I feel like I would like that one. I've heard good things. I hear it's like fun. So
yeah. It's a good movie. And what I think is good is that they're solid movies in terms of the storytelling too. Like they are really solid in that. So I think he is a very competent, actually very visually interesting director and really can direct his performances and get something good out of his actors. So I think this is better than I thought it was going to be. So I'm actually quite happy if this is, if Deadline is correct and this guy directs Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, I think he could do it. I think he's very capable.
I see a question in the chat from Lingonberry who says, do we think he could do sci-fi, which Woman of Tomorrow is?
Yes, I think he could. He's done a lot. There was some visual effects in Cruella and even in I, Tonya. They had to do some visual effects with the triple axel because Tonya Harding was famously one of the only in the world who could do the triple axel. And so
have
like
to be pretty strong to do it.
Margot Robbie is like not really doing that. So they had to work with some special effects. Although she did skate a little bit, I think.
Margot Robbie's amazing, but she's not triple axel.
So he's done effects with Cruella and even in that Finest Hours movie where they had to like recreate this terrible storm and this bad weather that these guys were going out in. I think he's pretty competent with effects. And all of those movies have a different genre it was playing into. So I think he can play with genre. Hopefully he'll understand the, I'm not worried about the sci-fi aspect. I want them to nail the Western part. I think that is, to me, that's more important because that really gets to the heart of like the revenge drama and, you know, the true grit that it was inspired from.
Yeah, I think stylistically, the Western is maybe even more important than like the sci-fi because it's very Western influenced. I think you could do it with like less sci-fi influences and more Western. But I don't think the opposite is true. I don't think it works without that sort of Western framing.
Yeah, you could maybe cut out the dinosaur pond if you wanted to, but think
why would you though?
The dinosaur pond is so one of the best parts. But I think you have to really nail the Western part of that. And I think this guy truly is a very competent filmmaker. So I think this is maybe the best case scenario. So I would be actually very excited if he went through this. So I hope they have like retained him. They've gotten that contract signed. He's ready to go. I hope that is the case. Do we have some other thoughts in the chat about our new director friend? I feel like we have some. Let's see. Brian thinks it's pronounced like Dizzy Gillespie. Maybe so.
Okay. Makes sense.
Let's see. Lingonberry says, I never saw those movies, but I did appreciate Craig wearing a newsboy cap in all his photos. He has a vision. Very stylish.
It's a good hat. It's a good hat.
Yeah.
and Cruella was a fashion movie. And what is Supergirl if not fashionable? So
I actually
got it there.
I actually, there was a like a Disney wardrobe exhibit in my neighborhood art museum. There were lots of security guards around this exhibit.
But what did they think? You were going to like take one of the outfits and walk out with it?
I guess so. Steal some boots or something. Some of those Cruella outfits were there, and that was before I saw the movie. So I wish I'd seen it before I'd actually gone to see it. But Cruella, the movie is actually all about fashion. So Morgan, that I don't know if that makes it more appealing to you, but it's basically like two fashion designers like fight, like dueling it out.
I'm there. Fashion drama. Okay, now you're speaking my language.
Yes. Mind the Gap says Pam and Tommy was also good, but a bit exploitative. I've heard of this. I know it's about Pam Anderson and Tommy Lee. Just Tommy Lee? Does he have a last name?
I think
name?
It's Tommy Lee. Every time I say it, I keep thinking
it's not Tommy Lee Jones. It's just Tommy
that's
Lee.
What I keep thinking. I almost correct myself to Tommy Lee Jones, and I was like, no, very different guy.
Yes, totally different guy. I did want to watch that, but I don't know how to watch it. I guess I'll have to find it somewhere.
I feel like it might have been like an FX thing, so it might be on Hulu.
Okay.
But I wouldn't quote me on that.
I need to go through Craig's entire filmography because now I'm like really impressed with his stuff. Okay, let's see. anything else? Yeah, Rachel says, I want them to nail the visuals for the Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow movie for sure. I think this guy can do it. After what I've seen, I think he could do it. I have a hope in him now. So yeah, also live action comment is a must. I agree. In Cruella, she actually, this is kind of, I guess, kind of a joke about the Cruella character in that movie with Emma Stone, is that she has a dog. She has a pet dog that she loves named Buddy. And some of Buddy is, I think, CGI because he
is
like
Buddy. Is Buddy okay? Throughout the movie?
Yeah, but he's okay.
Okay, because I would have does the dog died. I would have found out anyway.
I'm trying to remember if the other dogs died.
Oh no.
but the other dogs are Dalmatians, and you really understand why she has this.
Oh,
you know, the real did the Dalmatians
do her wrong?
actually, very wrong.
Okay. I'm going to watch 101 Dalmatians, and the next time I'm going to be like, you know what, Cruella?
She had a point. Yes. Don't read the chat if you don't want to be spoiled. Yes. I also saw.
I'm sorry. I did read the chat. That's just, it's so intense.
It is pretty intense.
I didn't really see that one coming.
The Dalmatians really did not do any favors for themselves.
No wonder she's so angry at them.
This is nothing to do with what we're talking about. It's kind of off topic, but I guess we can sort of wrap up our conversation here, but Mark wants to know, are you ladies going to break at 9:30 to react to the new Joker trailer? Mark, I think we're going to do that on Patreon. So we're not I know that it is going to be dropping while we stream. Feel free to go watch it if you want and come back. We're not going to be offended, but we'll probably do that for our Patreon supporters. So Morgan, I'll just say, if you haven't watched this stuff, definitely watch. If you only watch two, watch I, Tonya and Cruella. I think you would like both of them. And I think you would find them entertaining at the very least. So I want you to report back and let me know what you thought.
I will do my homework. I will watch the movies.
It was funny because people were asking me about, you know, what I thought about the potential director. And I was like, I don't know. I've never seen his stuff. So I had to go watch it. So a lot of his work is available to consume. So if you want to go watch it, you should do it because I thoroughly enjoyed all of the homework I did over the weekend. Okay. Well, Morgan, do you have any other thoughts before we go on to our main discussion?
I'm excited that they're to the point where they're talking directors. It makes me think like, all right, we're moving along. It's real. It's real, people. We've been burned so many times before that, like, until they start shooting, a part of me is still scared that something could happen. Anything could happen. And we'll have to wait, like, 100 years like we did for the Flash movie, the greatest movie of all time. But I think this one's going to happen. I feel confident. I feel proud.
Like with the Flash movie, I'm not going to fully know it's really happening until I'm like, I have a ticket and I'm eating popcorn in the movie theater. Because they could make a trailer and then be like, well, we're going to just reshoot it all, or we're just going to cancel this movie. Or like what they did with Batgirl. So I'm like on edge.
Oh, that's true. Stuff.
So they could shelve it if they don't like it.
Just because they filmed it doesn't mean they'll release it.
So I'm going to be on edge until it's in theaters and I have a ticket in my hand.
I don't want it to be like Supergirl woman of tax write-off. So.
Oh my gosh, I would be so upset.
You crossed. Could you imagine?
I would cry. I would be so upset.
This podcast would riot.
It would be bad. Yeah, it's exciting. Things are moving. We have a screenwriter. We have a director. And most importantly, we have a Supergirl. We don't have a Ruthie yet. Once we get a director, I assume that is going to be casting will be underway. Very cool stuff. All right. Well, I guess we will move on to talk about another movie that we came here to discuss as we continue to go through the Tomorrowverse and doing our marathon to sort of catch up on the movies that we missed. We are going to be talking about Batman, The Long Halloween, the deluxe edition. And the YouTube description for this one, I thought this one was a little more thorough, so I pulled it from YouTube for this. It reads, quote, held hostage by two warring crime families, Gotham City is rife with crime and corruption. Adding to the chaos is the mysterious holiday killer who has been targeting the underworld and leaving a trail of terror and body bags. As Batman, James Gordon and Harvey Dent race to solve a deadly puzzle with ever-increasing stakes, a breach at Arkham Asylum draws Poison Ivy, Scarecrow, and Mad Hatter into the game. Based on the critically acclaimed graphic novel, this deluxe edition of Batman The Long Halloween seamlessly combines both feature-length parts into one epic saga, unquote. So yeah, we watched the seamlessly combined two parts into one epic saga for this podcast episode. So Morgan, I guess one of my first questions is, had you read Batman The Long Halloween, like the comic book? Because this is actually based on a comic book written by Jeff Loeb with art from Tim Sale. And so I was curious if you had read it.
I have heard of it because it's a very famous Batman comic book, but I have actually never read it. I believe Mike did, but I don't know that he remembered a lot of details because I was like, I'm watching The Long Halloween. He's like, oh, I think I read that one. And I was like, what's it about? And he's like, yeah, I read it for sure. So, all right.
Not helpful.
Yeah. And going in, I thought it was one of the other famous Batman stories, which is the one where Barbara Gordon ends up getting shot.
Oh, so, that's a killing joke,
I believe. So I got like, I want to say like 10 minutes into it and Barbara Gordon is like 6 years old. And I was like, I mean, that's dark. And then very quickly realized it was not the one I was thinking of. I was like, oh, that's the other kind of famous Batman story. Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. This is an adventure for me. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I could imagine how disjointed that might have felt when you encountered young Barbara Gordon there.
I was like, oh, she's so small. Oh, no.
It's cute that she wants to dress up like her dad for Halloween. Yeah, so I had read this a long time ago, and I think I let a friend of mine borrow it when I lived in Georgia, and I never got it back.
So that is always the danger of lending people things. It's like, oh my God, you're going to love it. Tell me everything that you thought when you read it, and then give it back. And they're like, yes, of course. And then like 3 years later, you're like, they just never gave that back, did they? I bet they didn't even read it.
So who knows where that copy of The Long Halloween is. But I did remember enjoying it. There are some differences between this animated movie that we're going to be talking about and the comic book. Some of the major beats are the same, but the reveal of the killer is a little bit different. So we can talk about that when we get to who the holiday killer or who holiday is. We'll talk about that. So, Morgan, when you watched this movie, were you interested in the story? Were you like into it? Did you see it as like a mystery whodunit? Like, what was your first impression of it when you finished it?
Yeah, I actually was into it. So at first I was like, oh boy, 3 hours, because we're doing the deluxe edition. Again, you made a good point earlier that if we had watched them one at a time, it would have been a tight 90 each. but together, they're quite long. So I was like, oh boy, okay, here we go. I can do this. But as I was watching, I started to get into it. I was like, okay, well, like, and I started to have theories about who was the killer. And I was like, I bet it's this person. Person.
Tell me your thought process, speculation.
Initially, I was like absolutely sure that it was Harvey Dent. I was like, it's definitely Harvey Dent. He's going through like a dissociative thing where it's like multiple personalities, and he doesn't know because the other personality is doing it. Like, a two-face situation.
Only, I should have brought a coin. I didn't bring a coin to flip.
Only the faces or the different faces of his personality. I was like, it's it's thematic. It's metaphorical. I was wrong. But
still made sense, though.
Still made sense to me. And then my second theory actually kind of weirdly turned out to be like closer. I was like, I bet it's his wife. But then you like see you see the person a couple of times and I was like, well, that looks like a man. So yeah. Then that threw me off. And then I was like, oh my God, who is it? Who's even left? And I'm like trying to like look at the other suspects. So yeah, they did get me into the whodunit. I was like, who could it be?
At one point, since I have read it so long ago, I couldn't remember who the killer was. And so I was kind of doing that same thing, too. I initially, at one point, thought it was Alberto, who was Carmen Falcone's son. I thought he was a little sketch at points.
He was a little sketch. Even Batman thought it was him. Batman. Batman was like, I got you. You went to Oxford.
Oh, look, Bunsen. Oh. Did he have thoughts?
Bunsen was sure that it was Harvey Dent. He said, listen, thematically, he's got two faces. It could be his other personality. Bunsen was completely on the Harvey Dent train, and he was shocked at the ending. Shocked,
but,
I tell you.
But I'm sure that he did not accuse Catwoman of being.
No, he knew the whole time. The thing is, he knew the whole time that it wasn't Catwoman. He's like, I know, I feel I have a good vibe about her. And also, all cats are innocent. Whatever they did, no, they didn't.
There were lots of speculation. Even the movie sort of points out that maybe this is Batman's first foray into detective work. They kept mentioning, like, you're not that great of a detective. I was like, geez, y'all stop coming down, like, on Batman.
You're gonna have to be a detective now, Batman. I was like, isn't that sort of his deal? Doesn't he do that all the time?
He's like the greatest detective.
I feel like they should have had him just to establish where we were in like a timeline. They should have had him be like, I've never detected before. And then I would have been less confused about all these people being like, you're not a good detective. I wanted him to be like, that's sort of my whole thing. But he was like, well, that hurt my feelings.
They were pretty harsh on Batman.
I know. Honestly, a lot of people were really mean to Batman in this one. I know. And I didn't like it either, Bunsen. Batman, he's such a delicate flower, really. If you get like a layer below the surface, he can't have all that negativity. He's got a lot of childhood trauma.
Well, he does have that. I think, though, he really channeled it, though, because by the end of it, he figured out who it was.
He did.
So, Morgan, I have a question that I'm very curious to hear your response to, because I had some kind of big feelings about it, because I don't think this is how – I can't remember. I don't know if this – I don't think this is how the book ends. Mm-hmm. So I think they took a little bit of a different take on the animated movie. So Batman figures out, spoiler alert, the killer in the animated version – is Harvey Dent's wife, Gilda. She is Holiday. To my understanding, she was the one.
That is what I understood as well. I feel like if you then went back and rewatched the movie and you saw all the scenes where Holiday shows up, you would notice that it's not her. But that's just my perspective. Because again, I was suspicious of her early in the movie.
Yeah, it didn't look like her.
It didn't look like her at all. Now, listen, maybe she's a master of disguise. I feel like I would have wanted that like a little bit more established in the text to kind of justify it to me, because I did early on. There's a scene where Harvey, after the house blows up. So this is like pretty early.
I have questions about that, too. Okay, we'll come back to it.
This is pretty early in the movie, all right? And this is where Bunsen really thought that Harvey Dent was going to become Two-Face, and he didn't. And boy, did that surprise Bunsen.
Oh, yes, the explosion. I thought it was going to happen then, too. Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is the moment. That's what Bunsen thought. Not me, right? That's what Bunsen thought. But it wasn't. But there's like a moment in the hospital where there's some flowers that come from the like the Falcone family.
Yeah.
And she is like, really weirdly suspicious about it. Like, she has a weird reaction. Like, she walks out of the room and I was like, oh, it's her. But then, so I, like, within the first 15 minutes of the movie, I correctly called the killer. But then the movie made me question my own reality, much like it made Batman, you know? I am not as good of a detective as Batman, who was also apparently not as good of a detective as he will be in the future in this movie. And so, like, when the killer shows up for the first time, I was like, oh, that's not her. Never mind. Yeah. But, yeah, so they really threw me off. I would like some explanations on why she didn't look at all like herself.
I also want explanations on how they survived that house explosion, because they were walking right into it.
They were, like, really close, and it was a pretty big explosion.
That feels like you should be dead. But anyway, so we get to the end. We find out that Gilda Dent is the holiday killer. And she is tossing evidence of her crimes into this furnace to burn it so she can get rid of all of her misdeeds and all of her connection to these killings. She's throwing away pictures and the weapon and all this kind of stuff. And Batman comes in and he wants to talk to her. He's like, hey, I know it's you. I'm a good detective. I figured it out. It's definitely you. And he stands there and watches her destroy all of this evidence right in front of him. And I did not care for that. I think that's a very strange thing for Batman to do. Now, granted, I realize that previous to the scene, Harvey turns himself in as the holiday killer. He confesses and admits guilt to all of these crimes. Even though really and truly he only killed Carmine Falcone and sort of indirectly kind of kills, I think, his daughter. And I don't know officially if we know he killed Carmine's sister, Carla, or not, or if that was Gilda. I'm not really sure who killed her in the elevator. She gets murdered in the elevator.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been. Yeah, that wasn't Gilda, was it?
It probably was Harvey.
Yeah,
they kind of bust up into that party. But so he did kill some people, but I think he clocks it in one of the scenes where they talk about the holiday killer and how they found the weapon in the basement. And I think he comes to this realization that, oh, no, it's not mine. So it must be my wife's. And so I think he gives himself over to Gordon and Batman as a way to cover up for her and to sort of sacrificially take her place so that she doesn't have to go to prison or face judgment for this. So they already had a guy they were charging for those crimes. So
yeah.
I get that, like, they had their man, but it seems out of character for Batman to be like, well, I guess I'm just going to participate in this cover up.
Yeah, I thought it was weird. She was like, she even says, like, I guess you're going to take me to jail now. Like, fully kind of like, okay, you know, it's up. You know, the Oxford pendant gave me away. Just really proud of my school alumni, alumni power. And she's like, you're going to, obviously I'm cooked now, right? You're going to take me in. And he's just kind of like, womp. And then, like, the next thing we see, he's, like, hanging out with Alfred, like, giving out chunky candy bars or something.
Choco chunks.
And you know what? I'm going to be honest. I know this is controversial, but I'm just going to say it. Those look like fun size. And I'm like, sir, look
you're
at your
like
house.
You're like a billionaire.
You're a billionaire. You can give out full size candy bars. You're going to get, like, one trick-or-treater the whole night. You're really going to get fun size. You're a monster. A monster.
And Albert seemed really excited about the trick-or-treaters. Like, why wouldn't he go out all Albert?
Batman is like, you know what gets me really hyped for Halloween is, like, letting murderers just kind of get away with it. It's a spooky time of year.
Because I don't think that's how it ends in the book. I think she's just by herself. And she destroys the evidence. So Batman in the book, I don't think is there with her.
Mind the Gap says, in the comic, Harvey took the blame and the book implies it's Gilda, but Alberto killed one person.
So that's the other big difference from the book to the movie is that there's like kind of three people who are responsible for the holiday stuff. But in the movie, it's kind of put all on her, even though Harvey takes some of the blame away from her. So, yeah. So those are kind of, I think, the biggest differences in the adaptation versus the book. But I thought for the most part, the adaptation was really good. I think the films, I guess these are two parts smushed into one, but the deluxe edition I thought was a great adaptation. This is one of, in my opinion, I guess we're kind of getting to like overall thoughts kind of early, but I thought this was one of the best DC animated movies I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I came into it, I came into it knowing I was going to have to watch it for 3 hours. So it was starting from behind for me because I was like, frankly, this is too long. But I found myself really enjoying it. Like, did it need to be two parts? Maybe not. Maybe not. Did it need to be like 3 hours? Also, maybe not. I really did enjoy like the full, I ended up getting into the story and I was like going along with the twists and turns and like trying to figure out what was going on and who the killer was. And I had a good time.
Yeah, I thought it was well made. So do you have any questions that you wanted to address about the movie, or did you have any like particular thoughts? I didn't really have any one way to get into the story, but did you have any specific things that you wanted to discuss?
Actually, Mind the Gap brought up something interesting that I was even going to mention, which is Mind the Gap says, you may notice that both The Dark Knight and The Batman took elements of The Long Halloween. And that was something I thought about while I was watching, is that realizing as I was watching the story and knew it was an adaptation of the comic book, that those two movies had taken bits and pieces of this comic story, because I was like, oh yeah, like something similar like that happens in like say The Dark Knight, or something similar like that happened in the recent Batman movie that came out with Robert Pattinson, where they're, you know, the crime families were kind of like a bigger part of it. And like the Harvey Dent story did kind of reminds me of The Dark Knight in some aspects of it too. So I thought that was cool, being able to kind of see the like the bits and pieces that they took from this story to move into some of the like the live action Batman movies that have come out in like the last, you know, decade or so.
Yeah, I want to say I remember an interview when The Dark Knight came out with the Two-Face stuff that they acknowledged that they used The Long Halloween as inspiration.
I feel
like that was intentional. That's been such a long time ago now. Oh my gosh, 2008.
I don't want to think about. That's why I was like in the last decade, and I was like, "Ooh, is it even?
Is that 16 years ago?"
Suddenly, my back just starts hurting. How did that happen?
Yikes! Yes. So that was quite a long time ago. But yes, there are some adaptations in live action film that have borrowed from this as well, because it is considered, to your point earlier, this is one of the great all time Batman stories. I guess we could talk about the voice performances as well. Rachel asks, is Jensen Ackles still Batman in this one? And the answer is yes, Rachel. He is a Batman and Bruce Wayne in this one. So Morgan, what do you think about Jensen Ackles as The Dark Knight?
I thought he was good. I thought he did a good job on this one. I think he's done a couple of these now, right?
Yep.
He's been this version of Batman in this string of movies. And I think he's a good Batman. He does a good bat voice. He's a good Bruce Wayne. I thought the voice performances overall were very good. I had an issue with like within the first 10 minutes, I was like, I don't know about Harvey Dent. I was like, I don't know about this performance. But I feel like as the movie went on, it like the first couple scenes where he's like really like fired up, the voice acting was like a little voice acting-y, where I was like, ooh, we're just like, you know, we're doing it, you know, we're going large. But then like I'd say within like the first half of the movie, it evened out within the first, I'd say, the first couple scenes. And then by the end of the movie, when he was doing Harvey and Two-Face. I was like, oh, okay. Like, this is like, this is obviously why they got this actor. He's doing a really good job with both of those things. Like, when he's going big, now it's really working. Whereas, like, in the beginning, when he was going big as Harvey, I was like, what's happening here? Harvey, calm down.
Yeah, I think that the contrast between the two was much better in that sort of second half. It would have been part two, but for us, it was just the latter part of the movie.
Just the later part, just the end of our journey, not the beginning.
So Harvey and Two-Face are voiced by Josh Duhamel. How do you say
Duhamel?
Duhamel? Yes. Duhamel sounds right. I could not remember how to pronounce it. Yes.
This is the only time in the history of this podcast that I know how a last name is pronounced.
This, I'm glad.
This is my moment.
Duhamel, yes, that is correct. He's a good actor. I like him. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything I did not enjoy him in. So he, I thought, actually did a pretty good job, especially when he got to really let loose his Two-Face. I thought he did a great job balancing those. But Jensen Ackles, like, I've only seen him. I'm not like a Supernatural fan, so I can't speak to that, although I know Supernatural ran for 100 years and people love it. It's just too overwhelming for me to even start to get into. But I do remember
too many seasons.
It's too many episodes. And I heard at the end of Supernatural, like, God is the bad guy. And I was like, nope, not doing that. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I heard. So that's a no for me. I do remember seeing Jensen Ackles in Smallville. And I wasn't like super impressed with him in Smallville, but as Batman, I think he's really good. I think he's done a really good job as Batman, very believable in both Batman and Bruce Wayne. I never questioned like that this guy was Batman. I never once thought, oh, he's being really Jensen Ackles. Right now, like I never heard Jensen Ackles. I heard Batman. So I think as a voice actor, that's what you kind of want to aim for. So I think he's done a great job as Batman.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I thought he did a really good job at like both sides of it too, because obviously one of the things about being Batman, like a lot of the superheroes, is that you want to be compelling as both, you know, the alter ego and the superhero. And I thought he did a good Bruce Wayne and he did a good Batman. There was a scene where he's Harvey Dent and Commissioner Gordon are talking to him as Bruce Wayne trying to find his alibi. And he like made some joke about like hooking up with some lady with a husband. And he was like,
oh,
well,
yeah.
Well, the husband doesn't like it. And Jim Gordon cracks up. And I was like, yeah, okay. Batman has it. Batman's charismatic.
Bruce Wayne is charismatic.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, yes, exactly. Bruce Wayne is charismatic. Like I could see it. I was like, oh, okay. This is the, you know, his kind of mirage that he does where he's like, I'm just drinking all the time and taking off on little boats while there's an emergency. And it's like believable. So I think he did a good job as like the sort of Bruce Wayne put like party boy put on as well.
Yeah, I think we've had a pretty good Batman and Harvey Dent / Two-Face in this movie. So those were all pretty good in terms of the vocal performances. One of the other main characters in the movie was Catwoman / Selina Kyle.
Yeah.
So Morgan, I'm kind of curious about this because this is the final film from Naya Rivera. I said Rivera,
oh my
right?
Gosh. Yes, that's right. I saw the end credit where they mentioned her and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, they did sort of make the movie in memory of her. This was the last thing she did before she tragically passed away at such a young age. From all we know, she died saving her son in a boating accident. So a very heroic thing to have done, but just tragic story.
Really sad because I don't know if you ever watched any Glee. It was show at best.
I did for a couple of episodes in season one. And I was like, you know what? I don't have to watch this.
You know what? I don't need to be in on every cultural conversation. I made that decision a couple seasons into Glee, but I did watch like the first couple seasons and she was so good. And also she had such a beautiful voice. And I thought she did a great Catwoman performance here.
Yeah, I don't want to say that, like, I guess I'll say I wasn't wowed by her performance. Like, the guy who does the Joker in this, I thought did a phenomenal job.
He did
job.
A really good job.
There were some performances in this that I thought were like, whoa, that was a big standout. For her, I don't think it stood out, but she was solid and very believable. And for the part that she had to play, I thought she did a great job interacting with Jensen Ackles, Batman. I don't know if it was one of those cases where they were recording in the same room at the same time. Sometimes they'll do that for animated stuff instead of like recording, you know, by themselves in a booth somewhere. Even though I wasn't like, wow, that was the greatest thing I've ever heard. It wasn't like that for me, but I thought she was really good. I'm sad that this was her last film, but I thought she did a great job, and I really enjoyed her version of Selina Kyle and Catwoman.
Yeah, I thought she did a really good job. I didn't realize it was her because I did look a couple people up like as the movie was going. I bought the movie on Amazon, and the X-ray feature on Amazon on like the Prime Video is usually very good, but it was very bad for this movie. So every time they were like, it would be like a scene with two characters. It would be like, say it was like Harvey Dent and Batman, and then you'd X-ray it, and it would be like, here's the actor playing that's doing Solomon Grundy, and I was like, he is not in this scene. But why don't you have the actor who's playing Harvey? I don't understand.
Josh Duhamel.
Josh Duhamel. The reason I know this is because I had to look it up.
Yes.
Like, so every time I did an X-ray to find out who the voice actors were, she literally, they never, no matter how many scenes she was in, she never came up in the voice cast. So it was actually a surprise to me at the end when that card came up. And now in hindsight, I was like, they couldn't have made Catwoman sing like that. If I knew I had Naya Rivera, I would have been like, and Catwoman likes to sing at a nightclub sometimes. And you're just going to have to do that.
That's how she meets Black Canary.
Exactly.
They're in like a band together. That there could be you a go. Story. You've just written a Birds of Prey story.
Boom, done. Anyway, I'm just saying it was a missed opportunity.
But she was good, and I'm just so sad for what happened to her. But I think this is kind of a good, you know, if this had to be her final performance, I thought it was a good one. Because I liked the interplay between Batman and Catwoman. I'm a big, you know, if Me I had to be too. A shipper of a relationship, I don't really like the word shipper, but if I had to be one, I'm a bad cat shipper. And so I really liked the way that they played it up. I think it might have even been a little different from the book because they mm-hmm. both know each other in the animated version, in the deluxe edition that we watched. Mm-hmm. Selina and Bruce both know each other's identities as Batman and Catwoman. So they know who each other is, and they've kind of had a little bit of a relationship trying to, you know, define it a little bit. They're not really sure what to do with it. And by the end of it, I think they sort of try to give it another go because Selina's there when Alfred's giving away that cheap candy. And
she's like, let Alfred have this. And I was like, that's right. That's right, Selina. No one can be mean to Alfred. There was one point where Batman is like in the Batmobile and he's driving around and Alfred is like talking to him and he just hangs up on Alfred. He's like mid-sentence. And I actually gasped like out loud. Only watching by myself, and I went, oh, no, he didn't. So I appreciate it that Selina was like, come on, he's excited, be excited.
Well, there were some good little moments between Alfred and Selina that I did enjoy, like when Thanksgiving comes around. If people don't know, The Long Halloween is a story where we didn't really kind of explain this, but
that's true.
It's a story that takes place over the course of a year from one Halloween to another Halloween. And in between, there are these murders that happen in big holiday moments and dates. So there's like a thing that happens during Thanksgiving and one during Christmas and one during New Year's and one during Valentine's Day and one during St. Patrick's Day and April Fool's and I'm trying to think of some other thing, the 4th of July. So all of these big Mother's Day, Father's Day, all these holidays, there's some crazy big thing that happens for all those things. But during the Thanksgiving moment, Selena is at Wayne Manor with Alfred, and they're surprised to see that Batman has taken some of the Thanksgiving meal to give it to Solomon Grundy, which I thought was a very sweet gesture.
I thought that was so cute. I just kind of like Solomon Grundy.
Like, please explain to me why you like Solomon Grundy.
I don't know. I just felt like no one was being nice enough to him. And like, he lives in that sewer. It looks like a little gross. He's eating rats. Like,
that's not great.
Batman's got that whole giant house. He couldn't give Solomon Grundy like one of his 50 rooms, sir.
What if Solomon Grundy likes the sewer? Maybe he just really likes it down there.
Maybe I'm judging. He's like, I like it here. But then they're like, I feel like they just kind of roped him into like an evil scheme. And then I was like, well, don't hurt Solomon. I don't think he knows what's going on. I was just like Team Solomon Grundy the whole time. I also felt like Harvey Dent was being like a little mean to him. He was like, he was telling him my name is Solomon Grundy. I was born on a Monday. And he like did this whole little rhyme. And I was like, listen. No one asked you to gild the lily there.
Harvey kind of ad-libbed like a yes and in that situation.
And Solomon Grundy was like, no. I said what I said.
this is my thing.
I respect that. Firm boundary, Solomon. Firm boundary.
Yeah, that was like a little odd couple thing that Solomon Grundy and Harvey did to face were having in the sewer. It was a little strange. But yeah, so a lot of pretty much, I don't want to say everybody in the Batman Rogues gallery, but a good chunk of them were in this. We had Poison Ivy. Poison Ivy, voiced by Katie Sackhoff. I thought that was fun. She did a great job.
Amazon wanted to tell me about that one.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It told me about that one, but not who Catwoman was voiced by, who was in it way more.
Way more than Poison Ivy. Poison Ivy does take over Bruce's mind for a couple of months to get him
I know. I thought it was really funny that it was like a couple of months. Like, nobody wants to know what's going on with it. He's like signing away his whole company, and no one else was like, hey, anyone want to check in on him? I beg you to make one additional friend.
Yeah, Catwoman was following them around a little bit, because I thought she thought something was up. But Alfred also was taken over by Poison Ivy, so brutal. Alfred couldn't even help him out. So he was really having trouble with Poison Ivy there. Mad Hatter and Scarecrow were a delightful duo in this one. I love Mad Hatter. Hope to see more Mad Hatter in the future. He underrated Batman Rogue gallery member. Joker, of course, caused some chaos with some planes that he didn't know how to fly, and some toxic gas that he wanted to get put on everybody in hoping to kill Holiday, because he found Holiday to be a competitor for him in the homicidal maniac category. So he tried to kill Holiday as well with that toxic gas. Unsuccessful, though. Batman put a stop to that. The Penguin was also there. Solomon Grundy, Two-Face. In the book, the Riddler makes an appearance for April Fool's Day. But that was not here. They removed the Riddler from this one.
I have to say, my second favorite character, Arthur Solomon Grundy, was Calendar Man, who I felt got a very raw deal in this one. Okay, first off, the whole thing is about his thing, which is days of the week, days of the month, days of the year. So first off, you think, like, you got to get Calendar Man in this. You got to get him in there. And they treated him like Hannibal Lecter. Like, he's so dangerous that they have to keep him behind bars. Like, I don't think that man is just pulling pages off a page a day calendar. I think you can let him out and hang out for a while. And then at the end, when everybody breaks out of the asylum, everybody's out of jail, they leave him behind. Because he picked Tails. And I was like, this is where Harvey Dent, Two-Face lost me. I was like, that's just unnecessarily cruel. You are doing his whole thing and you're not going to let him out to just like be able to do some chaos, like bring his little page a day calendar, and, like give people paper cuts or whatever it is that he does.
Do you think he has like a page a day for like office quotes or like?
I think so too. He's probably got like, I used to have a page a day calendar of office quotes, and I also had a page a day calendar of 30 rock quotes.
Yeah, I had those exact calendars.
It was so good. And I used to like pick my favorite ones and like tack them up to my cubicle.
We might be the same person. I used to do that for my cubicle and my refrigerator.
It was so good. Cubicle was just covered in 30 rock quotes. It actually looked a lot like his cell by the end of it. So maybe that's why I was kind of like vibing with him. I was like, we're being too unnecessarily mean to Calendar Man. Like, how dangerous could he be?
Yeah, but even if he didn't get to break out, he was the only one, I think, who got to enjoy Taco Tuesday.
That is true. Actually, you know what? I did like how disgusted he was that he was like, it's not even a real – Taco Tuesday's not a real day. I keep telling you about this. Like, this is like a thing he and the guard do all the time where it's like, it's Taco Tuesday. And he's like, no, it's not a thing. This doesn't mean anything to me. Those tacos looked good, honestly.
I mean, even if it's not official – Taco Tuesday.
I was hungry when I was watching that, and I was like, ooh, Taco Tuesday does sound good. I almost got tacos tonight. I was like, oh, it is Tuesday.
It should be for every Supergirl radio.
Taco Tuesday.
So do you think he was going Two-Face was going around to all the jail cells in Arkham Asylum?
I think so, because he made a comment that was like, I picked tail, or like, why didn't I pick heads? I should have picked heads. I felt so bad for him. I was like, this just is. I mean, like, listen, they're all going back anyway, so like, you could have let him have his fun.
And he was very helpful. Calendar Man was giving the information to Batman and Gordon that were was helpful in the terms of like Joker breaking out. That he tipped him off to the Joker thing. So I think he deserved a little freedom. Yeah,
I know.
He was being
he certainly deserved freedom more than the Penguin.
Like, who did nothing in the movie.
Penguin did nothing. that was a little bit of my like critique of the very end, is that they like busted out a bunch of the rogues gallery for like for Batman, but then like most of them didn't really do much of anything at all. So it kind of felt like to me like, maybe we can strain down the characters that we're busting out so that like they can all have like their moment to shine. I just felt like some of them were there, but they didn't really contribute much.
I guess maybe they were paying homage to the book. Maybe Penguin was in that big final fight.
Probably.
And so that's why he's there in the movie. But here, I mean, he fought Batman a little bit, but he really didn't do anything. So I think he could have been cut from this. But yeah, so I also enjoyed Calendar Man. Very unique Batman villain. Doesn't get a lot of screen time in a lot of Batman stories. So I'm glad that he was featured in this. And Calendar Man is kind of what I remembered most from The Long Halloween. Nice. because that was kind of my first interaction with Calendar Man. So good to see him here. Were there any other vocal performances? I think we talked about kind of the big ones. I will say Carmine Falcone and I believe Maroney also were voiced by Titus Welliver, who you may know, Morgan, as the Man in Black from Lost.
I thought that was who that was. Oh my God. I saw the name and I was like, why do I know that name? When I was like looking at the credits. Okay. Thank you. That solved a mystery for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So some pretty big names here in this movie doing the vocal performances. Speaking of Carmine Falcone, what did you think about the mob aspects of this story?
I liked them. I thought it was interesting because I know that there are like the Batman stories that are, you know, more of like, we got to get Calendar Man before he, you know, strikes again. And then there are the more like grounded story, Batman stories that are about like organized crime and like that kind of stuff. So I thought it was interesting to get one of the more grounded stories where it's like, you know, as fun as it is to have like Poison Ivy like float in on like a little branch or something. I thought it was cool that a big part of the story, like you probably could have done without, you know, most of the without powers or superheroes or anything. It's like the story itself was kind of really rooted in these very human characters doing, you know, very sort of regular crime, you know, they're like money laundering and they're, you know, throwing people in the river, like swimming with the fishes. I thought that, yeah, I liked the mafia stuff. I thought it was pretty fun that you have the rival crime families. So they, each one thinks it's the other one. And then you have like the crime family that's in like Chinatown. And I thought that the whole, like, it really gave you a picture of like the Gotham City underworld, which like sometimes you just get like in a Batman story, like Gotham City's bad. But this one you really are like, oh yeah, like the mafia boss is like throwing a party and like there's people from like the city hall there. So yeah, it's pretty bad.
What surprised me about this is that I felt sympathetic towards Carmine Falcone. He did a lot of bad things, but I was still like, geez, it sucks. Like his like whole family got murdered. Like, yeah. And then he died. So I felt really pretty bad for him because his nephew is murdered. His son is murdered. His sister is murdered. His daughter is murdered. I think maybe one of his bodyguards is also murdered.
Yeah.
And then he gets killed. And it's just like, I mean, he is like a gangster. He is like a mafia boss.
So dude, like still a lot of misfortune for one person.
But he survived 5 gunshots in the earlier years when Bruce Wayne was just a wee child before his parents were murdered. His dad, Thomas Wayne, helped heal him. Like he did like a little surgery on Carmine Falcone and saved his life. So I thought that was a nice little twist, a little wrinkle to put into Bruce Wayne's story that his family had interacted with the Falcones to help start hospitals and do good things for Gotham City. I thought that was a nice little wrinkle in the story that was a little unique.
Yeah, I liked the idea of like, you know, we hear a lot about Batman's parents, obviously, because every different adaptation needs to show them getting shot.
It's very important.
Or else you don't understand that happened. but I like this version made them more kind of complex, more morally gray people, where it's like they kind of accepted this devil's bargain in order to do something that they thought was good, and that got them involved with the wrong people. And I really liked that scene where he, like the young Falcone, is talking to like a young Bruce Wayne, like as a little kid, and showing him the double heads coin. And I like the callback to that when he dies later or on in the movie. It seemed like he recognized that was Bruce that he was talking to, even though he was in his Batman garb, which I thought was a cool twist.
Yeah, it did seem like right there before he died, he got to learn Batman's identity. And the thing that I thought was really interesting, because I always try to kind of look for themes or you know, are there patterns in things that are going on with these characters in the story? And I felt, and I'd love your thoughts on this, Morgan, that there seemed to be like a thread of like either dysfunctional or disappointing families, and there was definitely issues with fathers in the stories. And I don't think as much mothers, although there is a mother situation with Gilda that we probably should talk about. Like Harvey and Gilda have a tense relationship. So there's like a sort of a dysfunctional family there. Gilda and Carmine's son, Alberto, they have a really terrible backstory where they were married at one point, but because Carmine didn't accept their relationship because they had a child out of wedlock, sounded like she was forced to have an abortion, and they had
kidnapped and like forced to like, you know, have
give up the kid
against her will. Like, yeah. It sounded like whatever they did to her was A, against her will, and B, ended up making her infertile, because there's like a lot of conversations that she has with Harvey where he says something like talks about them starting a family. And she's like, you know, I can't, like, I can't do that. And I was wondering why they brought it up so many times, because I was like, okay, like, I'm not really clear on if she can't, but she wants to, or if she can't, but she doesn't want to. And it seems weird that he keeps bringing it up in either case, but it made sense at the end, because I was like, oh, okay, that was supposed to be like foreshadowing about like her tragic backstory. But in between, I was like, is this movie just like kind of about bad husbands? Because it would also be like, Harvey would be like, I gotta go, Gilda. And she'd be like, don't go. And then like it would cut and it would be Jim Gordon being like, can't take the kids trick or treating. And I was like, are there any good husbands in Gotham City? Or
that's true. You could also look at it from a like a husband point of view, because then Alberto was a terrible husband.
Also a bad husband.
Also a bad husband.
Bruce Wayne, kind of a medium boyfriend. Like, yeah. I don't
or was he a great boyfriend to Poison Ivy?
He was a fantastic boyfriend of Poison Ivy. She was like, sign this, darling. Sign that.
They seem to be having a great time.
Hang with me in the weeds here.
I'm trying to. Oh, yes. What I was going to say about Gilda is that I think the tragic backstory of her baby that she said like got taken from her womb, I think was also a reason why Holiday used the gun with the baby bottle nipple thing.
Yes.
So I think that's also like a tease as to who the killer was. So I think that's sort of referencing her story, but you don't find that out until much later as to why Holiday used a gun with that as a silencer, an effective silencer. Yeah. So I'm glad you pointed out the husbands as well, but like, families definitely, like, there's obviously the Falconis and the Marconi families. I mean,
you even get to meet Marconi's dad, who is like retired from the mafia biz and is just like,
oh, sorry, Maroni, not Malcolm.
Maroni, you're right. Yeah, he's just kind of chilling out in his winery and gets taken out, which I was like, oh man, he was Ramaconning it. Like,
and
bad for him.
What did he have? What are those little desserts? The
cannolis.
Yeah,
he was really mad. That was one of my favorite lines in the whole movie. He was like, it when they're multiple, they're like cannolos, not cannoli. Like, you're a bad Italian. How dare you, sir?
Yeah.
It's a murder of cannolis.
And then we do get some stuff about the Wayne family. And then what I thought was really interesting was that there was also this thread of Alfred mentioning, he says, quote, sins of fathers failing to something about the sins of the fathers, basically like needing the sons to get redemption for them. And it seemed like that was a thread that was going out through Bruce's storyline, because Bruce wonders if Batman is a way to redeem his parents after he learns about the connection to the Falcone family. So I really liked that was going through all of the different characters and through the storylines, in terms of, you know, even with Sophia and her father, you know, Sophia was like going to be the next in line for the Falcone throne, whereas Alberto was not seen as somebody who could do that. So there was like some stuff in there with the Falcone children. So I really liked that. And there was also like this thread, I think, that was going through the movie. There's a line of dialogue that says, quote, the only thing that ends war is peace, unquote. So I thought that could have been something that would go in terms of like the duality of things. So lots of twos and doubles. Of course, you get a Harvey Two-Face story, and then you also have that kind of thread that goes through it in the dialogue, where, you know, people talk about two heads are better than one. Batman is, you know, Batman flips a coin, Carmine flips a coin. They basically create Two-Face. Let's see. There was also some stuff where Calendar Man suggests that Harvey Dent is leading a, quote, double life. Selina talks to Bruce about their relationship and how they are, quote, two different people, unquote. Harvey tells Gilda, quote, I am only one man, unquote. And then Even Alfred tells Bruce that, quote, your parents believe that there were two ways to look at everything, unquote. So so in addition to the themes, there was a lot of double talk and twos and pairs. And I thought that was pretty cool in terms of the dialogue. Some of the two-face like references could be a little trite, but you know, it's a two-face story. So I think it fits.
Yeah, I do wish that the family theme there was a whole Catwoman story about Carmine Falcone being her father and her trying to find out learning who her mother was. That felt very tacked on at the end to me. Like, it felt very underdeveloped. And I wish that they had spent like a little bit more time with that. Like, it's a three, if when you watch them both back to back in the deluxe edition, it's like almost a 3-hour movie, and it felt like there was time for it if they had sort of moved some stuff around. But as it was, it kind of felt like it was just sort of thrown in at the last moment to be like, see, Catwoman's on theme too. And I was just like, I just want to know more about this. And I feel like we're done. We're wrapping up.
Yeah, I don't know if the Tomorrowverse is going to go into that. The comics definitely do. There's whole Catwoman stories where like she's trying to find, I think there's one story. Oh, I can't remember which one it is, but I know Tim Sale does the art for it. So it might be connected to this one. But she uses the Riddler's help to figure out her family ancestry. Ooh. So there's some pretty cool Catwoman stories where she does try to figure out if she is the daughter of Carmine Falcone.
And I believe that is an aspect of the Batman movie that came out a couple years ago. Like, I don't know how, 2 years ago, maybe? The one with Robert Pattinson, the Pattinson movie.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know how it was called, the Pattinson. and I do believe he is her father in that one, too. And that's kind of like part of her backstory. But it feels like it's more developed in that, at least. Whereas here, it just felt like at the last minute, they were like, we need to give Catwoman like a motivation. And it was just like kind of thrown in there. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wish it wasn't this late into the story that we found out about this. And I feel like it's not going to get that much payoff. And it really doesn't. Like, as he's dying, he thinks that she's her mother and he says the name and she's like, cool, that's all I needed to know. Puts the hat back on and walks away. I was like, really? You don't want to follow-up questions? Any follow-up questions at all?
Yeah, he thinks.
I don't even know if that meant anything to her. Like, did the name Louisa mean anything, or was she just like, okay, got a first name, bye-bye?
Yeah, she is on to the investigation to figure out who that is.
She's immediately Googling.
She's a much better detective than Batman. Batman's like, just fine, destroy evidence. Totally
in this
cool.
one, it's in this one, it's possible.
Yeah. If you've never read some of those Catwoman stories where she's like, it's not really like a Batman story. They're like, ooh, Catwoman stories.
I do love Catwoman.
Definitely check those out. I'm trying to remember the, I know there's one that I really liked called Her Sister's Keeper, I think is one of the stories. Ooh. It's about Selina and her sister, who is a nun.
Okay.
That's kind of fun that her sister is like this nun who tries to do all the right things, is very, you know, a godly woman. And Selina's kind of, you know, she's on the streets and doing some things maybe she shouldn't be doing. So it's kind of a fun dynamic between the two sisters there. So in some of the comics, her backstory and her family life do get explored. So I'm kind of sad it doesn't really get fleshed out in this movie, but maybe
yeah,
it happens in another Tomorrowverse movie.
Because I did like this version of Catwoman a lot. And I really did. We talked about it earlier, but I liked the Batman and Catwoman dynamic. I generally do. But sometimes I'll watch something and I'll be like, this isn't my favorite like version of the Batwoman, the Batman Catwoman dynamic. Like, I feel like I don't love this version. I liked this version quite a bit. I liked how they were kind of like flirty with each other, even when they were fighting. There's an early scene where she like jumps off the building and he thinks that she's like gonna die. And he's like, oh no. And then she lands on the train. She's like, look at that. And then he jumps down on the train and like totally beefs it right off the side of the train. She's like, oh no, did he die? And then he comes back up and he's like, see, I got it. And I was just like, oh wow, these dorks flirt real weird.
These lunatics jumping off buildings exactly. And going to trains.
He's like, oh my God, this is so working for me. I really like this. And I liked that, like, towards the end of the movie, you realize that they know each other's secret identities, which I thought was fun because they didn't really overplay it. They just sort of had them kind of casually know, like, although there is one scene where she just says his name out loud in front of somebody. And I was like, okay, that's a rookie mistake.
I think she did it in front of Alberto, but it didn't matter because he was going to die in like 30 seconds.
Exactly. So she's like, ooh, that resolved itself.
But he was like, wait, Bruce Wayne is Batman? Like, he like made a big deal about it. I will say, Mind the Gap fact checks me in the chat, so thank you for this. Catwoman, When in Rome, that is the story I am thinking of. Yes, that's the one with where I think she recruits Riddler to help her find out her family history. So that's a pretty fun one. Tim Sale, I love his artwork. I think he passed away not too long ago. So it was, I have a Catwoman drawing from Tim Sale somewhere.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, he drew it for me at DragonCon 1 year. So I was very excited about that. And I guess speaking of Tim Sale's art, in the opening titles, and I guess we could talk about the animation, is the opening title sequence uses some of the art from the comic book in kind of that the sequence where it's sort of before it forms the white bat symbol there at the beginning in the opening title sequence. I thought that was incredible. I liked that they used the Tim Sale art from the book, and it also still, there was like an opening scene and then the opening title sequence comes in and it continues the storytelling as it goes through. So it's giving you like little bits of scenes and helping you introduce yourself to the characters so that you kind of know who people are. So I thought the opening title sequence was fantastic. Now, I was disappointed with the end credits because the end credits were basically just like a navy blue screen and like credits rolling.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty boring. So maybe they spent all
done more.
They might have spent all their budget on that opening title sequence and they were like, just throw some names.
We're done.
It'll be fine.
Now we're done.
But some of the choices there I thought were very, very good. So I enjoyed the animation quite a bit.
Yeah, I really liked when they get when Batman gets doused with that the scarecrow gas, that the animation style changes and it's like a lot spookier and he's got like kind of a scarecrow mouth. I thought that was really cool. Like visually you just understand what's happening. And I thought that was really neat. Character design wise, I don't know how I felt about Catwoman's outfit. I'm gonna be honest. I was like, it just looks like she's naked all the time. What is the thickness of that fabric? Cause it looks like it's not at all, like non-existent, like it's like full, like, I don't know. Not even like Lycra or spandex would give you that look. It looks like she's like, have you ever seen when they like body paint the models sometimes and like fancy things? That's what it looked like she was wearing every time she was out as Batwoman. And I was like, oh,
or a Catwoman.
A Catwoman. Yeah. I keep saying Batwoman.
Batwoman's a totally different character.
So very different.
Yeah, now that you mention it, it does sort of look like body paint.
It was too much. I was like, I know, we get it, okay? It's very tight, but it's not, like, no fabric is that tight.
I believe, somebody can fact check me, but I think Catwoman looks different in The Long Halloween. I think she has more of a purple suit and more of a cat mask in the book. So I think her look, you might like her look better in the book than in this movie. I think they did some different choices style-wise for her in the movie. But her book counterpart is more cat-like. Yes.
Because I liked her Selina Kyle character design. Like whenever she was Selina, like I liked the little haircut. I liked her outfits. I was like, oh, I love this. And then like she would show up as Catwoman. I was like, and she's naked again.
I would agree. I liked her Selina look and her design. I thought that was good. But yeah, I think the Catwoman in the book is a little better in terms of her outfit. One of the things I liked about, and I would agree with you about the Scarecrow toxin sequence, very scary. it was red, and it was kind of like in this almost like a Forbidden Forest type situation where like trees were scary and everything. One of the things that I also latched onto through the animation was that I noticed there were a lot of reflections in a lot of those shots, which I thought was fitting because typically if you're telling a story where there's like two identities to a person or somebody's like trying to understand themselves, you might see a lot of reflections or people looking in the mirror, things like that. Lots of reflections in this one, which I thought was somewhat fitting for like a Two-Face story. They didn't do it as much with him, but with other characters and other moments in the film, there are a lot of reflections. So there's like a close-up of Bruce Wayne's eyes looking out of the window of Carmine Falcone's office overlooking Gotham City. They have one in the Chinatown alleyway fight where there's like a reflection in the camera flips. I thought that was cool. There's Batman and Gordon have reflections in Calendar Man's window at Arkham. Joker looks in the mirror to see if he has the face of a killer. He's like, do I have the face of a killer? And he looks in the mirror and he's like, yes, actually I do. the close-up, there's a close-up of young Bruce's eye, which I thought this was like the best shot in the whole thing, is there's a close-up of young Bruce's eye and it shows Joe Chill running away after murdering Thomas and Martha
that
Wayne.
That was cool. I liked that shot too.
Yeah, so that was good. There's Catwoman and Batman's reflections in the puddles when Selina finds him in the alley after his toxin experience or nightmare. There's another shot of Batman looking out of Gordon's office with the reflection of the city. There's also some use of shadows too, but I was really I was really interested in the reflections and what that said about the, you know, the characters trying to figure out who they were. Some of them were trying to figure out who they were and what they wanted to be. And so I thought that was a cool use of that. So a lot of cool camera shots and action sequences were very great. I think the Tomorrowverse has like the best action sequences of any DC animated thing that I can think of, because they really do a good job with that.
Yeah, the action sequences in this were really good, actually. I enjoyed them a lot. Like, especially, like, Batman early on when he's fighting the guys in, like, Chinatown. And he's, like, taking on, like, three different guys. Yeah, it was really cool. And they all had different weapons, too. I thought that was really neat. I was like, oh, how's Batman going to do this?
And are you surprised to know that this was rated R?
I was, because I saw it. So I saw it in the beginning. And then when they had that fight scene, I was like, oh, is it going to be gory? Because I've watched like animated things that are gory before. And I don't care for it. Like, I want this level, right? Like where they're like fighting each other, but not where I'm seeing anything I don't want to see. I watched the Amazon Prime show Invincible, and that thing is nuts. I was like, oh, I never wanted to see that ever in person or animate it. So I was like ready to like hide my eyes, and I was like, oh, this is like normal animated violence. This is not anything crazy. So I was like, what's the R rating? And I think it's just because they dropped the F-bomb a couple times.
There's a lot of blood too.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's one, you talked about that Chinatown sequence. There was one shot that I was like, oh, because one of those guys has like a, I don't know if it's like a throwing star or something. And Batman knocks it and it goes in the guy's face.
Yes,
it's real quick, but like the thing
I saw that too,
is the front of his face.
I was like, and this is why I thought, like, because this happens early on, and I was like, oh, is this going to be really gory? And then like it never really hits that level. Like people get shot and it's like bang bang and there's a lot of blood, but it's never like, you know, somebody getting a throwing star in their face level. Like
that was probably the worst.
That's like the one level up where I'm like, I don't know if I want to see this. But it was, yeah, I was shocked that it was R. I like didn't really, I mean, I guess the blood, you know, and it's like an animated thing, so you want to like probably rate it appropriately so that kids aren't like, what's happening? Yeah. I feel like it was like more of a, yeah, it's like it's more of an adult story. So like you probably don't want kids to be like, oh, okay, let's watch it. And then it's like, what's happening in this thing? So I feel like the R was more of like just kind of a general, I don't think it like necessarily deserved an R rating, but they were like, well, now that we have it, let's throw in a couple of F-bombs, kind of justify this thing.
a little bit of blood will get you that hard R.
Yeah. I guess in animation, especially because like people see animation and just kind of assume it's like an all ages thing. And sometimes it's just not.
Well, and I thought it worked for this story. And I think the book is kind of violent like that too, but
that makes sense.
But the way that like the mob families get murdered and things like that. I mean, it was pretty bloody. And I think that actually gave a seriousness to what was happening to them. And the fact that that they didn't know who it was and they didn't know where it was, where they were going to attack next. They probably guessed the day that there was going to be an attack. Any holiday probably would have had an attack, but they didn't know what was going on. And so these things that happened to them were very serious. So I think having a lot of that blood really, for me, it made it more of a, like stakes got higher because of how much blood there was. I guess, Morgan, is there anything else that you wanted to address about the movie?
I think we covered everything. I just wanted to say, like, I liked this one a lot. I think this, as we have begun our, you know, our trek through the Tomorrowverse, I feel like it's been a little hit or miss, if I'm being honest. And this one was a hit. I actually like this one. This is probably the one that we've watched so far that I've liked the most. Which is ironic because it is so long. So I was already primed not to like it. I was like, nothing needs to be this long.
Won you over.
Yeah, it won me over. I was like, okay, the long Halloween deluxe edition. Let's do this. I thought they did a good job with the story. I thought it was compelling. I thought they, you know, I think if I had watched it in two parts, I would have also liked it. But I do think that like it works as one kind of whole story together. I think where they split, I could tell where like movie one would have ended and movie two began.
Like with the poison ivy stuff.
Yeah, you could tell. It's like the poison ivy stuff is the end of like essentially like movie one, and then movie two starts with the poison. And I think that's like a good place. Like I think that they made a good cut where they did for like the storytelling. But I just thought overall it was like really well done. It was fun to watch. It wasn't, you know, it didn't feel like it dragged a lot in any places. And I think that they did a good job with all the characters. So I like this one a lot.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they put a little more effort into this one because A, it's Batman.
It's Batman. You know, they're going to bring their A game for Batman. You know, when DC goes out, they're like, "How do we get Batman in it? How do we make it about Batman?" So I should have known that they were going to be bringing their best material to this one.
But then also, this book is beloved and very popular and one of the best
good
Batman
source
stories.
Material. Yeah.
So they probably wanted to honor this one, and I think even though they changed some things and some kind of big things they changed, but I think other than Batman letting Gilda burn evidence,
that was not great.
Other than that, I still can't get over that he was with her while she was doing it. But other than that,
he could have just been like, "Why could you stop?"
Yeah, I maybe want to put both of you in jail.
No, Gilda. No. I remember seeing an early comment from Mind the Gap who said, "I believe they said Long Halloween was in development before they decided to make it part of the Tomorrowverse," which maybe you could argue is why it was one of the first ones.
I guess you're like, just use these people.
It's fine. Part of the same thing, right?
Yeah, so, good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would agree with you, though. I think this is probably the best thing that we've watched in the Tomorrowverse so far. I really like the Legion of Superheroes movie. Obviously, got Supergirl, Legion, weird brainiacs. They're so good. But I think this Batman, The Long Halloween, I think was very good. So they did a good job adapting it and also bringing some new things to the table in terms of the style and the storytelling. So I would recommend it if you're interested in it. Even if you don't want to watch all of the Tomorrowverse like we are doing, even though you should, and you should listen to all of our episodes.
You should be prepared. You should be prepared and ready, like us.
But if you only had 3 hours to kill instead of all of the other ones, I think this is a good watch that would be worthy of your time. if you wanted to spend that time with a DC movie. Okay, well, Morgan, I have some snap judgments that we can make about The Long Halloween. So let's get to them.
In the game of snap judgments, each person is presented with two options, but must only choose one. First instincts are recommended and explanations are unnecessary.
Okay, our first snap judgment is better half of Harvey Dent, the district attorney, or Two-Face, the coin-flipping maniac.
Like, if you were going to write a story that only could have one of them, which would... I mean, I think I would focus on Harvey Dent just because I don't have the puns in me. I don't think I could keep up the two-ness.
That's fair.
Two-Face. I think that's too much work. So I might want to tell like the early story of Harvey Dent. Like what did he do at Gotham City University or whatever they said he went to? He went to school. What was he doing in law school? What was he doing? So what I think. So I think if I had to write a story using only one of them, I think I would go Harvey Dent, district attorney. There's more that you can do, I think, with that.
That's true. I would do the opposite. I would go Two-Face. Listen, Harvey Dent's like not a great husband. Okay. But Two-Face, like what if Two-Face learns to love again? I think it would be actually really funny if you tried to do like a law procedural show, but it's like Two-Face. So like sometimes he's like a really good lawyer and then like sometimes Two-Face just like murders somebody and he's like, oh no.
Or what if it was like a romantic comedy where he did learn to love again, but it was like a Beauty and the Beast kind of situation.
Yes. Could she love him at his Two-Face? If she can't love him at his Two-Face, she doesn't deserve him at his Harvey Dent. I think we're pitching all kinds of great things.
Okay, that is a better story. I like that a lot.
Okay, if you could write a Batman story and you were told you had to include one of these villains, which would you choose? Calendar Man or Mad Hatter?
As much as I like Calendar Man, you could really play with holidays.
You sure could.
But I like Alice in Wonderland, so I think I would want to lean into the Mad Hatter of it, because I think Mad Hatter is an underused Batman villain.
He is.
I think there are stories to explore with him. Plus, he's got that jaunty hat that he wears.
I love the hat. I think it's like fashion icon status. So, yeah, no, he's great. Obviously, I have to go personally with my boy Calendar Man. And all right, so I'm writing a story about him.
Yes.
It would definitely be about Taco Tuesday.
I think
it's like about, like, you know, as he slowly comes to terms with how much he loves Taco Tuesday, he fights it, but he can't fight it for so long. and then he escapes and he like maybe he starts like throwing out taco shells, like, you know, throwing stars.
He gets his own food truck, maybe.
He gets his own food truck. And then he starts really taking off in the foodie scene. And then like, next thing you know, he's on Top Chef. And then Calendar Man runs a very successful food truck in Gotham City.
And I think the end of that story has to be him campaigning to make Taco Tuesday like an official holiday.
Oh, official holiday.
Like a federal holiday.
I want it on all of my calendars. It's really important. These are the issues that people care about. And everyone's like, we don't care about it too much. She's like, everyone cares about this.
And then everyone has to eat tacos every Tuesday from then on.
To mandate it. He gets like really intense about it.
Yeah, it makes him the villain of the story though, because some people are like, I don't like tacos. I'm tired of tacos.
It's Tuesday. I want to eat something different. He's like, no. We've talked about this. He just goes too far. He goes too far with the Taco Tuesday. I think that would be a beautiful and haunting story.
I like it. We should work on it.
We've got it. We're workshopping it. Okay. In the movie, Alfred is ready to hand out a Choco Chunk candy. We know that they're the small ones, but okay. But if Alfred was in our real world, which Halloween candy do you think Alfred is giving out to trick-or-treaters? Candy corn or York peppermint patties?
York peppermint patties seem a little fancier. to me.
Yeah.
I think Alfred probably would want a little higher class candy.
I think there's something funny about the idea of somebody just like handing you just like a handful of candy corn that like they've like fully taken in their hand and they just kind of like dump in your bag.
Maybe it's packaged.
It's funnier if it's not. it probably should be packaged. Yeah. I trust Alfred, but I'm not eating the candy corn he hands me. You know?
So I think it was the finest candy corn.
The finest candy corn money could buy. I'm also going to be go with peppermint patties because I think that they're fancier. They're more sophisticated.
Yes.
Sophisticated candy.
Yeah. That feels like Alfred would be into that. So I'm glad that we made all of these very important Batman, the Long Halloween related snap judgments.
No judgments on your snap judgments.
Rachel does disagree with you. She thinks Alfred's giving out full-size candy bars.
They looked small to me, but you might be right. I wasn't spending that much. I spent a lot of time on this podcast ragging on him, but I actually didn't spend that much time looking at it on screen. So,
but the thing that I think is important to mention that it was all the same candy bar. It wasn't like a variety pack. It was just
not even some loose candy corn.
Well, he doesn't see a lot of trick-or-treaters, so
he is just excited to be there.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Supergirl Radio. If you'd like to contact Supergirl Radio, you can post a comment on our website at supergirlradio.com. You can email us at supergirlradio@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on X and Instagram, all at Supergirl Radio. If you like what we do, we encourage you to give us a rating and write us a review on Apple Podcasts and anywhere they have reviews for podcasts. Supergirl Radio is part of the DCTV Podcast Network and the Multiverse of Color Network. So go check those out. You can hang out with us as we go live and wired on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on the DCTV Podcast YouTube channel. We're also live on the Supergirl Radio Facebook page. DCTV Podcast also has a Tee Public store. So if you're in need of new DCTV related t-shirts, tank tops, sweatshirts, onesies, mugs, notebooks, pillows, or stickers, they got all kinds of things in the Tee Public store. You can go to supergirlradio.com and click on the Tee Public store link at the top of the page.
And since we talked about Batman, the Long Halloween Deluxe Edition, we have some Batman designs in the DCTV Podcast Tee Public store that we would love to suggest to you, including my boy Solomon.
Solomon Grundy. We got some Solomon Grundy designs in there. And we got some Batman designs. So if you are in need of new Batman stuff, go to the DCTV Podcast Tee Public store and check out our merch. We would also like to thank our Legion of Super Sponsors for supporting the Supergirl Radio Patreon. These people are Michael, Anne Marie, Yvonne, Nicola, Abby, Miriam, Nicole, Brian, Ethan, Danny, Majuba, Zachary, Annie, and Rachel. If you would also like to support the podcast and become a Legion of Super Sponsor, you can go to patreon.com/supergirlradio. If you would like to keep up with me, you can find me on Instagram at the Derby Kid and on social media on the social media platform Vero. I'm over there at Derby Kid. If you were on Vero, you would know that I watched Craig Gillespie's movies over the weekend because I posted about them over there. And I also have a YouTube channel that you can find at youtube.com/duckmilkprod, hoping to get some new content up there. I also do a travel blog with my brother. You can find us on social media at Oasis Broom. So if you want to go check that out and see where we've been, hopefully I can get some more content up there soon. But those are all the ways that you can keep up with me.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mojotastics, and also as a co-host on the Legendary Ladies podcast, where last week we talked about the new Beyonce album. Next week, we're going to be talking about the new Maggie Rogers album. And we're also going to be talking about the Quiet Onset documentary about Nickelodeon, which will be interesting because we're all kind of different Nickelodeon generations on that podcast. So some of the stuff that I was watching, I was sort of watching more as like somebody who had heard about those shows but hadn't necessarily watched them growing up. But I think Kat and Amy did watch them growing up, so that should be interesting. And you can check us out on all the social medias at The Legendary Ladies. including YouTube, where we post up streams of our podcast episodes. So if you ever felt like watching them, you can go to YouTube at The Legendary Ladies and subscribe and check us out. You'll always know when the new episode comes out.
Yeah, that's exciting about the Quiet on Set documentary, because I watched that as well.
Good. I used to love All That, which is like dates myself, but the other stuff I was like, I had heard of, but it was like I had kind of aged out of it.
Same for me. I almost aged out of All That, so I was on that cusp where like All That, and this is gonna date me, I was of the Nickelodeon generation where I was watching Clarissa Explains It All.
Oh, such a good one.
I wanted to be Clarissa Darling.
She was like, so cool.
She was who I wanted to grow up to be. I watched a lot of Hey Dude.
Hey Dude. Oh, Hey Dude was really good too.
I watched a show called Welcome Freshman, which I had to look up because I only had I had vague memories.
I don't think I remember this one.
I remember these like kids who would get together and talk in their school, and there'd be like history lessons in there, and I couldn't figure it out for the longest time, but I found it. I think it was called Welcome Freshman. I also watched a lot of Doug. So that was like my
Doug.
That was like my Nickelodeon experience. So by the time I got like into high school and out of high school, like all of that stuff happened. And so I was like learning a lot during that documentary.
Yeah, me too. I didn't
know about this.
Yeah. It's so funny. Like somehow the stuff that we watch when we're younger, like just imprints, like I can still remember the song that they used to sing in Doug when they were like banging on a trash can. And I was like, I'm trying to do my taxes. I like, can't remember what I did last year, but I can remember like the banging on a trash can song from Doug. And I was like, why is the human brain so useless? Right. Like, why does it hold on to things I don't need and nothing I do?
Music is like that though. There are lots of, cases where people, you know, Alzheimer's or dementia patients,
that's true,
you know, they can't remember their kids, but they can remember how to play a song, or they can remember how to dance to a song. You know,
I'm always going to remember that Doug song. That's your comfort to me.
Well, music is very important. music has a really long lasting effect on people. So I'm glad you have that with that song from Doug. But yeah, so a good documentary, tough to watch.
Dark doc. You want to go in with like, you know, knowing it's going to be pretty depressing. Like, you don't want to be surprised by it.
And I think I have frozen up. We have gone long.
We're so close.
I don't know if we're going to come back in, but if you want to hang out with the chat and address some comments, I will try to restart and see if we can wrap this up.
I see Rachel in the chat says, okay, but imagine the Mad Hatter wearing hat. And now it's all I can imagine. And I think that would have been amazing. And I think that the Mad Hatter would like really enjoy hat too, because it's got like a bunch of tricks up its sleeve. I also see when we were talking about the things that we remember from when we were younger, Mark said, I was around for the original Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? In its original run on Saturday mornings. That's another song that I don't think I could ever forget, no matter how hard I tried. So that's also in there, along with the Doug song.
Thank you for covering for me. I hope you had a good time hanging out with people in the chat. It sounds like there's some more musical nostalgia there. So that is exciting. Well, I guess since I'm having troubles with this stuff, which I thought I had fixed, but no, still have to. I think if I go too long, maybe we need to make some of the episodes shorter.
StreamYard is telling us to like tighten it up.
Yeah, like
it's like, Morgan complains a lot about movies being too long, but aren't all of her podcasts a little long? StreamYard is very judgmental.
Yes. So we are getting pushed off by StreamYard. So I guess that will take us to the end of the episode. So that's going to do it for this episode of Supergirl Radio. But until next time, I'm still Rebecca Johnson.
And I'm still Morgan Glennon. And remember, two heads are better than one.
McGurk! I love
not
typing.
Not mess with my Google Docs, Meeksy.
Supergirl Radio is going live every night of the week. How do you like it? Is becoming a human burrito a plus or a minus? I don't know. It does seem snug.
I mean, they say you are what you eat.
Kira.
I love that.
So I do a podcast called Supergirl Radio, and one of our segments is Lena Luthor, boardroom or ballroom. Because
she looks like a boss in this film.
Nasty Luther, like a different Luther? It's not just Lena being mean?
No.
Helen Slater here. So fun to know that you're hosting a podcast called Supergirl Radio.